My name is Everett Leisure, and we're talking about the long-term effects of the golden calf here. Hopefully you're in the right place. Last year I gave a presentation on the New Covenant, and as part of that, we obviously the New Covenant, we get we're to have His laws, our Father's laws, written in our heart. But we realized that Abraham kept our Father's laws, but you know, he never tithed to Levi. And he never took his offerings to the altar in front of the tabernacle. And so, having his laws written in our heart, is that part of what we need to have written in our heart? And we really saw that there were a number of things that were required of Israel that Abraham didn't do. Some things one could say that we can't do. So is that supposed to be written in our heart? So I'd like to start. This topic was spawned because why did Israel have to do certain things that we really can't do and Abraham didn't have to do? And I'd like to start off by going to Deuteronomy 4 to clarify exactly what it was that Abraham did and that really was originally required of Israel. And Deuteronomy chapter 4 and verse 12 and 13, I think this will be familiar to everybody. And the Lord spoke to you out of the midst of the fire. You heard the sound of the words, but saw no form. You only heard a voice. So he declared to you his covenant, which he commanded you to perform, that is, the Ten Commandments. And he wrote them on two tablets of stone. That was his covenant, the Ten Commandments. And in Deuteronomy chapter 8, it also mentions his covenant. And in verse 18, and you shall remember the Lord your God, for it is he who gives you power to get wealth, that he may establish his covenant, which he swore to your fathers, as it is this day. So his covenant was not only made with Israel, but it was also made with his fathers. That's in this particular case, that's the patriarchs, which is reconfirmed in 1 Chronicles 16, verse 15 through 18. And I'm going to be moving right along here as far as the scriptures go. There's a lot to cover. First Chronicles 16, verses 15 through 18. Remember his covenant always, the word which he commanded for 1,000 generations, the covenant which he made with Abraham, and his oath to Isaac, and confirmed it to Jacob for a statute, and to Israel for an everlasting covenant. So the covenant that he made with Abraham was the same one that he made with Israel. It was his covenant, was the Ten Commandments. And the purpose for that is basically explained in Exodus 19, just before that covenant was made. Exodus 19 and verse 5 and 6. Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall be to me a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. So keeping this covenant was going to have put Israel in a position of representing their Creator as priest. And that indeed happened in Exodus 20 and 24 when the covenant was finally confirmed. Unfortunately, that didn't last very long. If you go to Exodus 32, within a month and a half, verse 7 happened. The Lord said to Moses, "Go, get you down, for your people, who you brought out of the land of Egypt, have corrupted themselves." Instead of being a nation of priests, God, Creator Yahweh, disowned them. He said, "Moses, they're your people. They're not my people."
Exodus 32, verse 7, and in verse 10.
"Now therefore, let me alone, that my wrath may burn hot against them, and I may consume them, and I will make of you a great nation." Now, if you read the rest of this chapter here, it seems pretty much like Yahweh shrugged his shoulders and said, "Oh, well, you know, after Moses, you know, pled for Israel a little while, and things continued on, you know, sort of semi-normal." Well, if you go to Deuteronomy 9, you'll find it's a little bit of a different story. Not entirely different, but it's got a little bit of a different slant on it. Deuteronomy 9, verse 16. "And I looked, and behold, you had sinned against the Lord your God, and made for yourselves a molded calf." And verse 18, "And I fell down before the Lord as at the first, 40 days and 40 nights. I neither ate bread nor drank water because of your sin, which you committed in doing wickedly in the sight of the Lord." About the same time, in Exodus 32, it mentions that Moses called for volunteers to clean house, it appears. And the Levites stepped up to the plate and went out and evidently executed those who were primarily responsible. It doesn't specifically say that, but they killed, I think it says, 3,000 people that particular day. And then in Exodus 33, verse 7, we find that Moses basically took his tent and put it outside the camp. And if he was going to talk to his Creator, he had to go out there. Exodus 33, verse 7. "Moses took his tent, pitched it outside the camp, far from the camp, and called it the Tabernacle of Meeting. And it came to pass that everyone who sought the Lord went out to the Tabernacle of Meeting, which was outside the city." And verse 9, "And it came to pass when Moses entered the tabernacle that the pillar of the cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and Yahweh talked with Moses." So even Moses had to go outside the camp. Creator didn't want to be associated with this particular group, it seems. We'll come back here, but in Psalms 103, it specifically tells us of Moses' place and Moses' function or what he did for Israel to prevent catastrophe, actually. 106, verse 23. "And therefore he said he would destroy them, had not Moses, his chosen one, stood before him in the breach, to turn away his wrath, lest he destroy them." And after Moses' fast, I presume, Exodus 34 continues the story. Moses cut some stone tablets and went back up to get the tablets replaced because he had broken the first set when he came down the mountain. So this was probably after his fast, you know, so it's another month and a half or so, something like that. And he said, as Moses approached Yahweh, then he said, "If now I have found grace in your sight, Yahweh, let my Lord, I pray, go among us. And even though we are a stiff-necked people, and pardon our iniquity and our sin, and make us your inheritance." So he's still pleading for Moses, for Israel at that particular point in time. But the Creator's response is sort of interesting. And he said, "Behold, I make a covenant before all your people. I will do marvels such as have not been done in all the earth, nor in any nation. And all the people among whom you are..." Notice it was, "I will make a covenant before all your people." He still hasn't owned them back again. "And among all the people whom you are shall see the work of the Lord, and for it is an awesome thing that I will do with you." So even after his fast, after Yahweh had apparently relented, he was still not owning Israel at that particular point in time. Now, if you go through the rest of this chapter, he lists various stipulations and things that he expects of Israel, and begins to conclude in verse 27. "Then Yahweh said to Moses, 'Write down these words, for according to the tenor of these words, I have made a covenant with you and with Israel.'" Now, if you go through this instruction carefully, you'll find that all of these stipulations that he's listed here have a direct correspondence in what was done at the Sinai covenant, Exodus 20 through 23, 24. I don't really have time to go through that, and you're welcome to go through on your own, of course, but I did put a summary together that you can pick up if you want my version of it. But basically every single regulation here is identified in the Sinai covenant in one form or another. And that's really fairly apparent that he's talking about them living up to the agreement that they had already reached. And it's apparent with the next verse, verse 28. Moses was there with the Lord 40 days and 40 nights. He neither ate bread nor drank water. And he wrote, that is, Yahweh, wrote on the tablets the words of the covenant, the Ten Commandments. So that's the covenant he's talking about. Well, what's this covenant that he's making? And the word there in verse 10, "I make a covenant," is actually an active participle, which basically means something's in progress. But they had already made the covenant at Sinai. That was not in progress. Well, before we go there, let's look at some other things that happened in this time frame, particularly when Moses came down the mountain. Verse 32. "Afterward, all the children of Israel came near, and he gave to them as commandments all that the Lord had spoken with him on Mount Sinai." Well, of course, the record we have right here, that took about 5 minutes, probably, if you read that. That's about how long that would take. But he was up there for 40 days and 40 nights, you know. So they probably weren't playing Scrabble, you know. They were undoubtedly talking about something else. And indeed, there is record elsewhere of things that happened on Mount Sinai, particularly at the end of Leviticus, chapter 25, to start out with. which talks, let's see, where am I here? Talks about sabbatical years and the Jubilee and that sort of thing. Chapter 25 starts out in verse 1, and the Lord spoke to Moses on Mount Sinai, saying, chapter 26 ends with a similar comment. These are the statutes and judgments and laws which the Yahweh made between himself and the children of Israel on Mount Sinai. Chapter 27 ends pretty much the same way. The phrase on Mount Sinai in the Hebrew is identical to the phrase that was used in Exodus 32 when Moses was coming down the mountain. So it's not talking about what happened in Exodus 20. It's connected up with what happened in Exodus 34 when Moses came down Mount Sinai that time. Leviticus 7 contains some also a reference to what happened on Mount Sinai at the end of chapter 7, verse 37. And this is the law of the burnt offering, the grain offering, the sin offering, the trespass offering, the consecrations of the sacrifice of the peace offering, which Yahweh commanded Moses on Mount Sinai on the day when he commanded the children of Israel to offer their offerings in the wilderness. The same phrase on Mount Sinai is used in Numbers 28:6, which talks about the morning and evening sacrifices and talks about the various burnt offerings that were required on the Sabbath and the holy days. So it puts it in that same sort of same time frame. But, of course, we know from Jeremiah 7 that Yahweh didn't talk to Israel about sacrifices and offerings when he first brought them out. This is not certainly late in the game, but it wasn't his... It obviously, from Jeremiah 7, and we'll read that, wasn't his intention to have... To worry, be concerned about required sacrifices and offerings, you know, the daily routine and the sabbatical or the annual festival routine. Jeremiah 7:22, "For I did not speak to your fathers or command them in the day I brought them out of the land of Egypt concerning burnt offerings or sacrifices. But this is what I commanded them, saying, obey my voice, and I will be your God." In fact, that's very similar to what we read in Exodus 19. Keep my covenant, obey my voice, keep my covenant. "And I will be your God, and you shall be my people, and walk in all the ways that I have commanded you, that it may be well with you. Yet they did not obey or incline their ear, but walked in the counsels and imaginations of their evil heart, and went backward and not forward." And I think what happened at the golden calf was not a step forward, but it was definitely a step back. And so the implication is here is I didn't talk with you about sacrifices and offerings, but you went backward, and that was the alternative. That's when that's why they were implemented. Now, the whole book of Leviticus, it's not perfectly clear in every single chapter when everything happened, but the book itself starts off giving us a rough idea of the time frame of the book. And in Leviticus 1:1, "Now the Lord called to Moses and spoke to him from the tabernacle of meeting, saying..." Well, the tabernacle of meeting was his tent that he set outside the camp. at the earliest. Now, the tabernacle, the official tabernacle, was also called the tabernacle of meeting as well. But the earliest possible time that would put Leviticus 1:1 anyway is after Moses took his tent and set it outside the camp. So that's the general time frame anyway of all of Leviticus. Numbers has a similar scripture. At the beginning of Numbers, it also gives us a rough idea of the time frame of Numbers. Now Yahweh spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai, in the tabernacle of meeting, on the first day of the second month of the second year after they'd come out of the land of Egypt. So that the temple or the tabernacle, if you read Exodus chapter 40.
What was the Numbers reference?
1:1. Exodus 40 puts the setting up of the tabernacle on the first day of the second year. And here in Numbers, this is the first day of the second month of the second year. So this was Numbers, at least initially, is in the general time frame that the tabernacle went up, and maybe shortly thereafter. And one of the things, of course, that happened with the tabernacle, Aaron and his sons were anointed as priests probably the first week that the tabernacle was officially commissioned there, and the first day of the second year. But it's interesting to examine exactly when Levi was set aside to serve in that position. And that's attempted to explain, anyway, in Deuteronomy 10. Deuteronomy 10 and chapter 3, it reads, "So I made an ark of acacia wood, hewed two tablets of stone like the first, and went up the mountain." This is before Moses' second trip up the mountain. And in verse 5, "Then I turned and came down from the mountain and put the tablets in the ark which I had made, and there they are, just as Yahweh commanded me." Now the next two verses talk about other journeys, the later on in Israel's trip after they'd left the Sinai area. And in my Bible anyway, it puts that particular section in parens, and it includes verse 8 in that, which says, "At that time the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, to stand before the Lord, to minister to him, and to bless in his name to this day." Well, the tribe of Levi were the ones that folded up the ark and carried it out when they first left Sinai. So they had obviously been chosen by that time. So if you realize that the way the parents sit in my Bible anyway, it has them chosen long after they left Sinai. And that really doesn't make any sense at all, because they were obviously chosen before they left Sinai. Though if you consider that those two verses about their later journeys stand by themselves as an inset, and you go from verse 5 to verse 8, it says, "Then I turned and came down the mountain and put the tablets in the ark which I had made, and there they are, just as the Lord commanded me." And then you go to verse 8, "At that time the Lord separated the tribe of Levi to bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, to stand before Yahweh, to minister him, and to bless in his name." It makes a whole lot more sense to me, because they They had been chosen by before they left Sinai. And Moses put the tablets in the ark. Somebody needed to be responsible for it. And at that time, Levi was chosen. So besides implementing the sacrifices, Levi was also chosen, probably while Moses was either still up the mountain or just shortly after he came down from that second trip. So what we have here that is transpired is that there has been a lot of instruction issued. But not only up the mountain, but also down the mountain. In Exodus 34, just a little while, just a couple of verses after the other passage we read about Moses explaining everything he'd been commanded on Mount Sinai to Israel, it tells us a little bit more in verse 34. But whenever Moses went in before Yahweh to speak with him, he would take the veil off until he came out, and he would come out and speak to the children of Israel whatever he had been commanded. So there was other instruction besides what he'd received on the mountain. There was other instruction that was included as well. And we read Leviticus 1:1 that Yahweh spoke to Moses from the tabernacle of meeting. And then it lists how you do a burnt offering and a peace offering and a sacrifice offering. That was being clarified exactly how that stuff was all done, and it was done in the tabernacle of meeting that was set up sometime after the golden calf. And so what's happened here, just like Yahweh repeated the instruction that he wanted Israel to abide by, that they had already agreed by, he is adding new stipulations to what they're required, specifically the sacrifices. He's setting up Levi. He's also clarifying what it is that they're talking about, or what it is that they should have known when they agreed to what they agreed to in Exodus 20 through 24. For instance, in Exodus 22, I think it's verse 31 at the end of the chapter, he says, "You shall be holy men to me, holy people to me." Well, what does that mean? You know, I mean, that sounds real good, you know, but how do I do that? You know, well, in Leviticus 11, it talks about clean and unclean meats, and towards the end, in verse 44, you don't pollute yourselves with these things. You be holy because I'm holy. And that's one of the ways that they were to be holy, is to avoid clean and unclean meats. In verse 18, it talks about not having sex with close relatives. You know, is that a way to be holy? I think so, you know. In verse 15, it talks about separating out those that have contagious diseases, specifically leprosy is what it means, but that's the same kind of thing. That's telling us how to be holy. That Israel obviously didn't get it the first time around. So he's clarifying what he intended in the first place. Now, evidently he thought they should have known that, and they didn't. Well, I'm glad we have the record, because I never would have known, you know, what that was without having some sort of an explanation for those kind of things. But at the same time, he also set up Levi and that priesthood, established the sacrifices, and specifically in Leviticus 26, he says, look, if you guys obey me, you're going to be blessed, and I'm going to take care of you, but if you don't, there are going to be big problems, and there are going to be curses that are going to come down on you, and ultimately, you may find yourself, you know, having to bow to other gods besides me. You don't like the way I do things, you know. There are going to be other people or other gods that you're going to be stuck with. So there was a lot of instruction given, and basically Leviticus and Numbers, set the time frame. And of course, in Exodus or Numbers 10, they actually left Sinai. And in Deuteronomy, it gives us a good account of what happened. The first chapter of Deuteronomy. And verse 6. And Yahweh our God spoke to us in Horeb, saying, you have dwelt long enough in this mountain. Turn and take your journey, and go to the mountains of the Amorites, to all the neighboring places in the plain, in the mountains and in the lowlands, in the south and the seacoast, to the land of the Canaanites, and to Lebanon, as far as the great river Euphrates. See, I have set the land before you. Go in and possess the land which Yahweh swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give it to them. There's another account of this in Exodus 33. You hold your place in Deuteronomy if you're going, you know, flipping the verses. We'll be back, and we'll also be back to, I don't think we'll come back here again. Exodus 33 and verse 1. Then Yahweh said to Moses, depart and go up from here, you and the people to whom, the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land which I swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. To your descendants I will give it. They're still not his people. They're still Moses' people. They're not Yahweh's people. And Numbers 11, 12 occurred about this time. This is the chapter after they actually walked out of the Sinai area. And Moses is evidently feeling a bit of the pressure. Did I conceive all this people? Did I beget them, that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom, as a guardian carries a nursing child, to the land which you swore to your fathers, to their fathers? You know, he's kind of buckling under the pressure a little bit. But they were still, even as of the departure, Yahweh had not re-owned them. Deuteronomy 1 and verse 19 continues the story. And I forgot to mention, I knew I was going to be going fast, and I do have some sheets here with all the scriptures that I used and a brief explanation. You're welcome to have one of those as well. Deuteronomy 1, verse 19. So we departed from Horeb, and went through all the great and terrible wilderness which you saw on the way to the mountain of the Amorites. And verse 20. And I said to you, you have come to the mountain of the Amorites, which Yahweh your God has given us. Look, Yahweh your God has set the land before you. Go up and possess it, as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has spoken to you. Do not fear or be discouraged. And every one of you came near to me and said, let us send men before us, and let them search out the land for us and bring back word to us of the way by which we should go up, and of the cities unto which we should come. Uh-oh. You all know what happened at that particular point in time. You know, they didn't make any points with their creator in the episode of the spies either, did they? You know, that he was very upset again and basically said, okay, you don't like my plan? You don't have to go into the land. You know, you can die in the wilderness. I'll take your children into the land. And that's pretty much what happened. So they could have still gone into the land, but he just gave up on that particular group. But he had decided to work with them, and he allowed you know, the children to live and go in. And that's pretty much the way it was for the entire time they were wandering in the wilderness, the rest of the time. And until, actually, just before Moses was about to die, at the end of the 40 years, he brought all Israel together and basically created the account we have in Deuteronomy. Specifically in Deuteronomy 1, these are the words which Moses spoke to all Israel on this side of the Jordan in the wilderness. He called undoubtedly the elders together, and he talked to them. Verse 3, now it came to pass in the 40th year, in the 11th month, on the first day of the month, that Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that Yahweh had given him as commandments to them. And verse 5, on this side of the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses began to explain this law, saying, and then it continues through the rest of the account there, and comes out on the other end in chapter 29, in verse 1. These are the words which these are the words of the covenant which the Lord commanded Moses to make with the children of Israel in the land of Moab, besides the covenant which he had made with them in Horeb. He had made that covenant with them, and that still stood. And these are the words of the covenant he made with Moab. Covenants are agreements between people. They're agreements to the mutual benefit of both. And in effect, you want both to buy into the situation. In Exodus, around Exodus 20, the stipulations of that covenant were discussed with Israel at least three times before it became official. The law that is being implemented in this covenant was discussed or was given before the covenant was actually made. They understood what it was, but Moses put it together formally in this in the book of Deuteronomy, which is a covenant. And verse 12, that you may enter into the covenant which the Lord your God, with the Lord your God, and into his oath, which the Yahweh your God makes with you today, that he may establish you today as a people for himself, that he may be God to you. This particular day is when he was establishing this particular covenant. And what are we talking about here? In Exodus 32:46, it clarifies a little bit more exactly what it is we're talking about. And he said to them, Set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today. Did I say Exodus 32? I meant Deuteronomy 32. Sorry about that. He said to them, set your hearts on all the words which I testify among you today, which you shall command your children to be careful to observe, all the words of this law. Deuteronomy 31, verse 24. Explains a little bit more what it is we're doing here. So it was, when Moses had completed the writing of the words of this law in a book, when they were finished, that Moses commanded the Levites who bore the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, saying, take this book of the law and put it beside the Ark of the Covenant of Yahweh, your God, that it may be there as a witness against you. Deuteronomy 27 also tells us, or sets the stage for what they're doing here. Deuteronomy 27, verse 4. Therefore it shall be, when you have crossed over the Jordan, that on Mount Ebal you shall set up these stones. And verse 8. And you shall write very plainly on the stones all the words of this law. And Moses and the priests, the Levites, spoke to all Israel, saying, take heed and listen, O Israel. This day you have become the people of Yahweh your God. This covenant fulfills Moses' request that he gave in Exodus 34 and verse 9, when he said, if now we have found favor in your sight, Lord, let my Lord, I pray, go among us, and even though we are a stiff-necked people, pardon our iniquity and our sin, and take us as your inheritance, as we read earlier. Well, Joshua 8 tells us a little bit more about what this law is that they put together. And verse 30. Now Joshua built an altar to Yahweh of Israel in Mount Ebal, as Moses, the servant of Yahweh, had commanded the children of Israel, as it is written in the book of the law of Moses. In verse 32. And there in the presence of the children of Israel, he wrote on the stones a copy of the law of Moses, which he had written. The Septuagint has an interesting version of Yahweh's response when Moses went up the mountain and asked Yahweh to take them as his people. And I assume that most of you don't have that with you. Free to look up that. It's I got this off of Esord, you know. So anyway, the Exodus 34, verse 10. And Yahweh said to Moses, behold, I establish a covenant for thee in the presence of all thy people. I will do glorious things which have not been done in all the earth or in any nation, and all the people among whom you are shall see the works of Yahweh, that they are wonderful, which I will do for you. This covenant was created at the behest of Moses. It was done for Moses, and consequently it was called the Law of Moses. Not because it came through him, but because it was done for him. It was not done because Israel was great and wonderful, but repeated constantly throughout Deuteronomy. We'll start in chapter 4. We won't read all of them. It tells us why this law was done. Now, O Israel, listen to the statutes. This is chapter 4 of Deuteronomy, verse 1. And the judgments which I teach you to observe, that you may live and go in and possess the land which Yahweh, your God, the God of your fathers, is giving you. And chapter 5, verse 33, you shall walk in all the ways which Yahweh your God has commanded you, that you may live, and that it may be well with you, and that you may prolong your days in the land which you shall possess. It was not given so they could be priests to Yahweh, so that they could represent Yahweh. That was now Levi's job. It was given to them so that he would not destroy them, so that they could live. They would have a reasonable amount of compliance with the will of the Creator. This covenant was not added to what was done in Exodus 20. Galatians 3, verse 15, explains that they didn't change covenants. Covenants were very serious things. And they're not changed or modified. In Galatians 3:15, brethren, I speak in the manner of men, though it is only a man's covenant, yet if it is confirmed, no one annuls or adds, that is, amends, to it. For this same reason, even covenants of men are not changed, how much more something that came from the mouth of the Creator. The old was not merged with the new. The Ark of the Covenant of the law that Moses wrote was set outside the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord. The covenant of the Lord was in the Ark. This covenant was outside the Ark. In Hebrews 7:11, we have a scripture that I think has gone somewhat unnoticed. Talks about the law. Therefore, if perfection were through the Levitical priesthood, for under it the people received the law. If the law was created to make Israel perfect, what further need was there that another priest should rise according to the order of Melchizedek, as it continues in the verse? Actually, where it says, for under it the people received the law, the word for under is epi right there. Actually, it means upon. And this is reflected in a number of different versions. But the intention, the law was hung upon the priesthood of Levi. The Levites administered it. They were the representatives of the Creator. And they administered it for the rest of Israel. What became known as the law was not a normal outgrowth of the Creator making things clearer. It did add detail that we need, but its main purpose was to create a system that would keep Israel within certain acceptable bounds of behavior, so that they could live and remain in the promised land and have a foundation on which Yeshua could build. The law of Moses adds to our understanding of what was originally intended, but it was also a compromise in many areas for people who didn't understand and lacked faith in the Creator. If we are to understand what's important to the Creator, we need to understand what His original intention was and focus on that and understand that Yeshua expects a higher standard of us than what he expected of ancient Israel. And I'm open for questions.
Yes.